Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go. In a town of 1200 off an old dirt road. And a country boy is all I'll ever be.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mountain Man Dan Show. Here again with Nick this week. Been more than a week, but we're here with Nick today. Nick, how you doing?
Good. I think it's been, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's been a little while. It seems like with work and everything, you've been busy, I've been busy. We've been able to get together somewhat here and there, but it's been a little more than the once a week than I'd like to see. But here we are. So what have you been up to?
Well, I had to go get a parts car today from my duster, so that was 4 hours away, so that was a little adventure. And
is this parts car duster you got, is it another one of the ugly ones with the square headlights on it?
No, it's a round headlight car.
Are you gonna swap that front clip?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
I like those old dusters. I can't stand any classic. I don't care. The old Ford Texas. I know the 78, 79 Ford F-150s and Broncos and stuff are considered super rare and super hard to find with those square headlights. But I am not a square headlight kind of guy on a classic car. They gotta be round headlights.
I typically am a round headlight guy too. But the only thing about this car that kind of makes it odd is 80 is kind of its own year. It was the last, pretty much it was just them trying to get rid of the last of the 70s era F bodies. So they put a different nose on it, and the rest kind of stayed the same. They did have a different spoiler option. It was a three-piece wing instead of a one-piece, and mine's got that.
What year is your parts car you picked up?
79.
Yeah, that's real close then, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, really all I want it for is the K-member, the steering column, what else? K-member steering column, the wiring harness to use as a template. I got a set of bucket seats in it. Believe it or not, I could have got all that on eBay. I really got the parts car for the window louvers. That's really why I got it, because they're so hard to find.
Yeah. I was going to ask you something. Have you decided what you're going to put in it for a rear end? I know we were talking on Facebook the other day.
8 3/4.
Yeah, but what?
It was with a 323 and a sure grip.
That seems awful, awful quick to me for a rear end.
What, 323?
Oh, three. I thought you said 223 or something.
No, 323. 323 is kind of your middle of the road ratio. It's not a dog like a 276 or a 242, but it doesn't make it scream down the highway like a 391 or a 410 does. It's kind of nice. It's something in the middle.
Yeah, I thought we were talking the other day on Facebook, but you put in like a 242 or something like that, Matt. That seems like, you know, I get the concept of cruising, but at the same time, when I think muscle car, I think Dodge Duster, Chevy Chevelle. You know, when I think muscle car, I'm thinking, you know, somebody revs up their little rice rocket at the intersection, you put that sucker on the ground, drop second gear, and pick the front tires up off the ground, and away you go.
Well, the 360 I'm putting in it, I mean, it's a fairly mild 360, but they don't need much help. It'll probably be around 350, 360 horsepower and 400 foot-pounds of torque, and the car weighs 2,900 pounds, and I got a 2,500 RPM converter in the transmission and a shift kit where it shifts hard, and it'll probably run pretty good. It'll probably be a high 12-second car.
Yeah, when I did my when I redid that 72, that blue one, that C10,
right?
I put a 373 in that one, and it was like right on the verge, because I did an LS swap on that one, so I put a 4L60 in it,
right?
And with the 4L60, it was like right on that verge where empty it did okay, but you put any kind of weight in it, you know. Two fat guys like myself or anything like that, and they couldn't decide between third and drive. And excuse me. I mean, it would run about, I want to say, like 2,200, 2,300 RPM down the highway.
It's not too
bad. My friend did one real similar. He put 410s in his, and his would run about 3,100 RPM going down the highway. And after driving his, every part of me wished I would have put a 410 in mine.
Yeah, they tend to have a little bit more out of the hole than the 373 does.
Well, you know, with a small block, you know, running 3,000 RPM is not really that ridiculous. You know, a modern small block, 3,000 RPM is pretty middle of the road, you know.
Yeah, it ain't too bad. I mean, I probably wouldn't want to spend that with a Chrysler 360, but, you know, I was kind of wanting to keep mine around 23 or 2400 at 75 miles an hour.
Put a 318 in that bad boy. That'll spend 3100 all day.
Yeah, 360's got a lot more power than a 318 does. I mean, I got J-heads and everything. Got 202 intake valve, 1.78 exhaust, I think.
Screw it. Let's put a 440 big block in and be done with it.
No, I was actually talking to a guy today. It's got a 413 big block that I kind of entertained the idea of acquiring for it. But I'd be content with a small block for now, I think.
You know, honestly, that would be, you know, 1980s. You're getting into having electronics and stuff. That wouldn't be too hard to swap like a 5.7 Hemi out of like a 2005 Dodge Ram pickup into those. Those are pretty hot motors, you know, considering what they are.
Yeah, there's a couple guys at the local track that have older Mopars. They do run pretty good. I'm so invested in the old style Mopar small blocks. I have so much stuff laying around for them. I can put them together for like nothing.
Yeah, and see, I'm a Chevy guy at heart. I just bought the first car this week. I bought a car this week too, and it's the first non-GM product I've bought in quite a few, probably 7 or 8 years. And I was kind of excited about it at first, and now I'm starting to have some serious regrets. Like, I knew better than to buy something that didn't have a bow tie on. I've had really good luck with my Chevys.
You couldn't have gotten further from a Chevy. You literally bought the vehicle that was used, was by the people go to World War II. So, just throwing that out there.
I'm pretty sure this car has got a little bit of Hitler left in it somewhere. It's just such a pain in the butt. So, Nick.
Yeah, you probably hear Herman Göring speech when you hit second gear.
Yeah, so Nick got his 1970, you know, or 1980 Duster, you know, not super American, but it's not like a full-on, you know, 60s, 70s classic, but it's still pretty cool. And I went the other way, and I got a 2000 Volkswagen Jetta with a TDI diesel in it. And, yeah, I'm having some regrets, Nick. I probably shouldn't have bought that car.
It happens.
So,
it happens.
I bought the car from a mechanic shop here in town. He had it mostly for $500. Basically, it's ugly, it's old, it goes slow, I don't want it anymore. So I found for $500, a little TDI diesel. It's only got like 185,000 on it. It's not really that bad for a diesel. So I was like, you know, for $500, I'm not into it that much, I'll go grab it, you know. So, sure enough, I mean, when he said it was slow, that was not an exaggeration. It was like 0 to 60 in 3 or 4 business days. I mean, it was slow. And this was my first realization that I might have be getting it over my head. That I started looking at why, because the turbo obviously wasn't winding up, or not spooling up, not putting any boost into the engine. So, I started messing with it, and I found a broken vacuum line where he tried using the group. Somebody, and I sent him a text, and said, oh, yeah, I had that vacuum line break, and I fixed it. That's about when I had started having problems. Well, I tried fixing the vacuum line with Gorilla Glue instead, you know, just putting a freaking $2.90 plastic tee in there, you know. Right. So that was, like, the first, like, oh, this guy, I don't know how he can call himself a mechanic. This guy must be an idiot. So then I ran about a tank of gas through it, tank and a half gas through it, something like that, or diesel. And I'm driving to work one morning, and the thing just decided, oh, boom, I'm not going to run today. So I sat there and messed with it on the side of the road, went, got my truck, got the trailer, towed it back to the RV park where I'm staying for work. And I just cannot get this stupid thing to run again. I mean, the engine obviously runs. The engine's not junk. But it just it won't run. I checked the lift pump. The lift pump's working. I checked the fuel pump. The main, it's got a rotary pump on. I checked the rotary pump. You know, you crack an injector and it sprays fuel all over the place. The fuel shutoff solenoid is not, it's not kicking off. I checked it on those Volkswagens. They got what's called a 109 fuse. It's a real common problem with turning the ignition system off. And everything there seems to be working. You prime it up, you fill the fuel filter up with fuel, starts the car, it'll start and run for about 10 seconds, 15 seconds, and it'll die, and the fuel filter will be empty. So I got to reading online, and they said, oh, yeah, the fuel pumps on those have to be timed. And the fuel, it might have jumped, timing on the fuel filter or on the fuel pump. So I was like, oh, the guy told me he just did a timing belt on it. So I'll bet you it's messed up. So I popped the timing belt cover off the top. And sure enough, the timing belt's so loose, I was able to grab the can shaft and turn it like three notches by hand without just slipping it inside the belt. And same with the fuel pump. So now, now I know 100% the car is out of time. And I'm sure if the timing belt was running that loose for that long, it's probably, I'm sure the cogs are all rounded off on it. So I got a new timing belt on the way, but I'm just not sure when I'm going to have time. I knew this car was going to be a little bit of a project, and I wanted a little bit of a project car, but I wasn't expecting this right off the bat. I'm just not going to have time to deal with it for a while. And I would just turn around. I already paid to have permanent tags put on. I just paid like $160 to put Z tags on it, which is our permanent tags here in Alaska. So I'm just kind of sitting there like, oh, I just registered, I just titled it. So I'm going to go ahead and let it sit. I got a new timing belt. And then since the motor mounts, where the motor mounts are in that car, you basically have to unbolt half the engine and tip it up so you can get to it.
Right.
So, but while it was running, the stupid thing was actually pretty, kind of fun. It's got an auto in it, which is, I wish it had a 5-speed, but the auto was fine just for a commuter car. But damn thing was getting like 54 miles of a gallon on diesel.
Man, that's really not bad.
No, as much running as I do back, and I'm working in Fairbanks and I live in Delta, which is about 96 miles each way from my house to the RV park where I'm staying. And lately, every time we get rain, I'll just go home and get some laundry done and stuff. I thought that having that little commuter car would be nice versus putting that kind of miles on my 1-ton pickup all the time. So, yeah, that's now I'm thinking if I got to pull the motor and do the timing belt on it, I'm going to pull the motor this winter, strip it down, stud it, do all this different work to it, and then probably put like a 4.5-inch hood stack on that bad boy, spray paint two red striping, racing stripes down the hood, put like a 3-foot-tall spoiler on it, and get a big sticker that says Dirty Rice on it, and just get it through this rolls mad coal out of that hood stack and just...
That'd be sweet.
Well, I thought the Dirty Rice is kind of funny. It's kind of a ricer car, but with it being diesel and blowing, and if I get it to roll coal, I thought that'd be kind of funny. But
yeah, that would be sweet.
Those little TDIs, they actually, that's the thing. That car weighs sub 2,000 pounds, I think. And them freaking motors will run and hold 250 horse.
Yeah, you could probably make the car run pretty good, but just boost, fuel, air, and good management.
You put a 50 over injectors on those things, or 70 over injectors. Bypass and stuff on it, or put a bigger turbo on them, some different stuff like that. And the newer Jettas, or the Gulf or whatever one, they have a V. So you got the VHT 15 that are in this carbon, or the 17 that's in some of the newer cars that you can find scraps. You can actually turn. You can get those cars turning 350 horse for sub $1,000.
If I were you, I would just go ahead and turn the fuel up on it and get an eBay GT3, probably a GT45 turbo, or a T324 type deal, and run like 30 pounds of boost on it and see what happens.
So I first got the car. I got it on the internet. One of the first things I started seeing everybody talking about this thing is called the Every Mod. And I did a little research on it. You know what the Every Mod is on the Jettas? So this one's got what's called the ALH model. That's the code letters for the engine. It's got a manual. It's got an electric control, but the manual belt driven off the timing belt, rotary type fuel pump on it.
Right.
And so the every mod is there's two pins. I forget what it is. I think it's 3 and 4, 2 and 4, something like that, or 2 and 3. But anyway, there's two pins on that electric harness, and you cut them, and you wire a resistor in there. And then some people are using, like, one of those little dial resistors where you can, you know, dial up from, like, 100 ohms up to about 900, 1200 ohms to adjust the amount of resistance. So basically what that does is it tricks the engine and the VCM into thinking, oh, the engine needs more fuel, and it will just start dumping. Depending on how much your resistor is, it will just start dumping fuel into the motor to the point where you're idling. It won't even idle. It'll just kill it out. that is apparently the poor boy's tune on these Jettas. And you just cut those two pins and solder a resistor in there, and it'll just freaking just start dumping fuel. And, you know, if you know anything about diesels, you know, when they start getting fuel dumped into them, they take off.
Yeah, yeah, as long as they got the air to support it, they typically do.
Yeah, so I don't know. And the other part of me just like, you know, I'm just going to stick on Craigslist best offer, cut my losses, and get out from under it before it costs me any more money. I'm kind of pissed off about the whole deal. But it was supposed to be a running car when I bought it. And it just goes to show more reasons why I don't let anybody work on my personal vehicle. I've never taken my car to a mechanic. I've taken my truck to a tire shop 2 times in my life, and both times I messed something up. The first time I didn't tighten the lug nuts and a wheel went flying off. I mean, this last time they got a tire so far out of balance that ruined the tire in a 100-mile drive home.
Good Lord.
So I just, and if this little jet is just, I don't want other people working on my cars, and this is a good reminder of why. Because this guy owns a freaking mechanic shop in town that I got the car from. You know, you think you know what the heck he was doing, but I don't know.
Yeah, so, I'm kind of at the point now where my 360 is pretty much all the way done, but I haven't really decided what camshaft I want to put in it yet. I can't decide if I want something that's got somewhat decent street manners, or if I'm going to do what I usually do and put some humongous bump stick in it that sounds like a pro stock car at idle. Dude, I haven't decided yet.
When I think muscle car, I'm not thinking of daily driver. That thing is it needs to be a freaking, you know, get up and go.
Well, big cams usually kill all your low end torque, so I'm kind of wanting to find something kind of in the middle where it's got tons of torque and still makes good horsepower.
Yeah. I've been shopping around. I've been looking for another 68 to, you know, like 68, 72 model C10 step side.
Right.
But I showed you that Impala I found a couple weeks ago. I found that 64 Impala I was looking at. I actually bought that one and turned around and sold it already.
Nice.
But I'd like to get a classic, another classic, and do another restore it. But I spent a lot of time and money on that 72 I did, and I'd like to do another one of these days. But it's just one of them things.
Time and money.
Yeah, time. That's exactly right. Right now, I just do not have. I don't even have the time to do a timing belt on this stupid Jetta. You know, we're middle of the work season. I'm working, you know, no less than 12 hours a day. I mean, by the time the work season rolls around, I'll have some time. I probably would have some money by the end of the season, but then it's freaking 40 volt, and I don't feel like going outside and doing anything. So I need to build myself a garage. What needs to happen?
Right.
So, we'll go ahead and get into our usual. What are you carrying today?
Glock 19, two spare mags, and a Bond Arms Derringer, of course. No day is complete without a Bond Arms Derringer. You should have at least one on you.
So you're done. You had to go on like a 2 hour trip to go get that parts car, didn't you?
3.5 hour trip.
Three and a half.
One way.
You stop and see our friend David Alsup on your way through?
That was nowhere near him.
Oh, really? You went the other direction?
Yeah. Yeah, I was in Woodbine, Kentucky. That's like literally headed to Knoxville and then north.
Oh, okay. I'm not real familiar with Kentucky. I just know that David's down there somewhere too.
No, he's up in Pulaski.
Okay. Yeah. I am carrying, and I've been getting a lot of crap, but I've been talking about this pistol again lately. but I am carrying the good old Taurus tractor. 44 Magnum, two and a half inch barrel, 44 Magnum, five shot, 210 grain spear gold dot at 100 foot per second. And this gun was featured, I just got the first time I've ever had a print article, an article go to print. I just got a copy of it. I just got it today and back in the mail, and it was about this gun. So that was pretty cool to see, you know, see my name in an article I wrote on paper.
Yeah, it looked great.
So, yeah, I just don't think it's funny. Everybody keeps giving me crap for this Taurus. Like, oh, you know, the best way to tear down a Taurus is just to shoot it enough. I'm like, you know, I've chopped this gun enough that the back of the grip is starting to wear off, and it still has been relatively problem-free. I did have to put a firing pin spring in it, you know, firing pin return spring. But I put a lot of heavy loads through this thing. That's pretty hard on that spring. And I've had to change that spring in my Rugers, and I haven't had to change one in the Smith yet, but I have had to change even Rugers before.
Right.
So, honestly, I mean, it's been relatively problem-free for the amount that I've shot and carried it.
There's nothing wrong with that gun. It's been good. I mean, you've shot the crap out of it, and it's been with you everywhere. If they work, they work. I mean, that's just the way it is.
So that's the way I look at it. That's the thing I see about Taurus. I mean, they have a lot. We hear a lot about the bad ones. We don't usually hear about the good ones because they just, you know, people buy them and they work the way they want them to work. And I think I think one of the reasons, I mean, I know Taurus has, and I'm not going to deny it, they have some guns that come out there like, how did that get past quality control? And their customer service, you know, if you need parts, it's horrible. I ended up fitting a different kind of spring from a different model gun in this one when I broke the firing pin spring because I couldn't get one from Taurus. Numeric didn't have one. Numeric Arms didn't have one. Their customer service is pretty crappy. I think they're working on getting a customer service plant here in the state somewhere that so they can make that a little better.
That's what I hear.
But, you know, Taurus sell, I bet they sell more pistols than Ruger and Smith and Wesson put together.
Yeah, and if they're listening, they really, really need to make a tracker and 3220. Just throwing that out there. But
you know, didn't like the old time, like the Taurus predecessors that were in Mexico, didn't they make a bunch of those Mexican Model 10s and 3220?
They may have. They may have. I know they made some 32 longs. My friend Ty, you've talked to him some on Facebook. You need to go message Ty sometime and ask him to show you his Taurus he bought from a guy named Buford Toon. Buford Toon is like a pretty legendary law enforcement officer here in Nashville, and he actually passed away last week. And his health has been really bad, but he sold a gun to Ty. It's a really cool gun you would like. It's a J-frame size Taurus, so it's a J-frame size gun. And it has these big wood Magna kind of target style stocks on it and a 3-inch heavy barrel. And it's a 6-shot 32 long.
I think I saw a picture of that gun.
It's a nice gun. And I tell you what, that gun shoots great. It's extremely accurate. It has no recoil, but it's really a heavy built gun. You could load some pretty warm 32 new police type loads for it with, you know, like 110 grain full wad cutter and really, really have some smoking velocity out of it. It's a great gun. It's really well built. It's a good quality gun. It has a great trigger. The bluing on it's nice. The wood stocks are nice. So, I mean, he's handed it off to me a few times. That gun's amazing. I love it.
Well, here's the thing about me, Nick, is when it comes to the big bores, you know, 40 caliber big bore, true big bore, like 44 Magnum. Yeah, I love the hot rod big bore. I like to get a big bullet hitting as hard as I can. But when I shoot the small stuff, like I got that Marlin 3220, I've had some 32H and Marv mag, you know, single sixes and that kind of stuff. I'm not real big on loading those guns hot. I kind of just, you know, middle of the road, maybe even on the light end, you know, just pleasant plinking loads and that kind of stuff. You know, if I'm going to carry, and the general rule, if I'm going to carry a gun, it's going to be, you know, a 40 caliber or larger. And that's when I'll worry about hot rod. When I'm shooting like, you know, like that 3220, I use it for rabbits and squirrels and stuff. I'm not really, you know, I'm shooting a 100 grain bullet at like 1100 foot per second out of that rifle. It's nothing real super hot, you know.
That's all you need to have a 3220 anyway, though. That'd do anything you need it to do.
Yeah. So, and then as far as knives go today, it's been a very disappointing week. I finally So I've told you before, I think I mentioned on the show, how I've always, for the last couple of years, I've carried a Benchmade grip tilling, orange handled, you know, plain Jane, whatever, 940, whatever model it is. I'm not really a huge. Yeah, over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, I've had that knife. It has just disappeared, you know, half a dozen times, and I always end up finding it. Well, here last week, it disappeared again, and I hadn't turned up yet, and I finally got tired of not having pocket knife, and all my other ones are in home, so I picked up a Smith & Wesson, like, $24 cheapo stainless steel assisted opening little crapshoot knife, but...
Right.
I gotta say that Smith & Wesson does not know how to put an edge on their knife. This thing is duller than shit. So we'll see.
Oh, I bet.
I'll get some stones out ready tomorrow night and see if we can get it to where it will hold a decent
edge.
Put
that up on the page. That way, some people know how to take a budget knife and put a real edge on it where it can be used as a knife.
You take it. And you put it on a knife sharpener, and then you sharpen it. And then you take a piece of leather when you're done with some dropping compound, and you drop it. And then normally most knives will take an edge like that.
Right.
Yeah,
not everybody knows that.
As far as knife sharpening goes, Nick, I have spent some serious amount of time, and I've spent some serious amount of money on knife sharpening. I've got all the DMT diamond stones. I've got Norton. I've got Norton stones. I've got water stones. I've got Arkansas stones. I've got just about all of the cheaper, you know, KME and all the different guided systems. I've have not owned, but I've played around with the Wicked Edge systems a lot.
Right.
I really like the Wicked. I'll put this out there right now. I am a fan of the Wicked Edge. I'm not a huge fan of many of the other guided systems. I find it to be a pain in the butt. The Wicked Edge, I really like. And if you've got between $500 and $1,000 to spend on a knife sharpener, freaking go for it. It's an awesome system if you have that kind of money to spend on a knife sharpener. I cannot fathom spending that kind of money on a knife sharpener, so I do not own one.
Right.
I've played with, you know, like the ones that you stand up and it's got the little rods and then you hold the knife straight up and down. And I've played with like the Delansky, you know, where it's got the little clamp and you clamp the knife in there and you flip it back and forth. And they're all pain in the butt to me. So this is how I learned to sharpen knives. I bought a buck knife, which is, anybody knows buck knives, know they're a pain in the butt to sharpen. They're hard to sharpen. I don't know what kind of steel they use, but they are hard to sharpen. And I would sharpen it, and then I would wear it out. I'd take it back to the coffee jar. I'd just take the stone, cut it into the stone, and then I'd sharpen it again. I'd take a Sharpie. This is like one of my biggest tricks when I was learning how to freehand sharpen, is I would take a Sharpie, and I would draw about a quarter inch up the knife blade from the edge on both sides. That way, when I brought it across the stone, I'd just make a single stroke on a dry stone. And then I'd look and I'd see where it was touching. And then I'd adjust, you know, okay, I want to be doing this a little different. I want to be doing that a little different. Or the knife just need profiling, you know, and I just play with it until I finally got decent. So now my favorite stones are, I've got them right here. I've got these are all Norton oil stones. I've got a IM91, a JM31, and a JM81. So a 31-81. And 91, you know, coarse, medium, fine grit. Two of them are just the regular, like, gray aluminum oxide, and then one's a red India stone.
Right.
And those are the stones I use pretty much for everything now. You know, if I get a knife that's just the touch-up, I just use the fine. If it's really dull, I'll use the medium. And if I've got some chips or I need to do a little profile, I'll use that coarse. And I pretty much use those stones for all my basic sharpening. Out in my truck, I have a Norton two-sided, you know, coarse fine. It does the trick. You know, I don't really use that one a whole lot. It just stays in the truck, you know, a little bit of oil of some kind on it, motor oil, whatever I've got in the truck. These ones in here, I usually use, like, sulfurized cutting oil on them just because I have it around from when I do chambering guns and that kind of stuff. Works really good for a knife sharpening fluid. It doesn't take very much oil when you're sharpening a knife. And then if I have time when I'm at home, like these ones are in the camp when I'm at home, I have an Arkansas soft and hard stones. where I'll really, if I have the time, I'll really polish up an edge with that soft and then the hard before I drop them. And as far as dropping, I've seen a lot of people like a bench drop, you know, where they've got a, like a piece of leather mounted on a board with their dropping compound. I've just got an old belt that's screwed to the wall. I mean, I'll put a little chopping compound on it, just work the knife back and forth. And yeah, I mean, I can put an edge on a knife pretty quick with just those stones and a strop. And you know,
it's not a bad way to do it.
Yeah, you know, I think the optimum they say for a pocket knife, they say like 22.5 degrees is about optimum. I like a little less than that, like maybe closer to an 18-degree edge, just because I like that they cut a little faster. And they do go dull a little faster. If you know, the finer edge you put on it, the faster it will go dull. But I enjoy sharpening knives, so it's not a big deal. You know, at the end of the day, almost every night, if I use my pocket knife during the day, almost every night I sit down with the stone and I touch it up. So
nice.
Yeah. So that's I think I've talked about knife sharpening on the show a little bit before. But yeah, so I mean, if I had the money, I would own a Wicked Edge. That is a really cool system. I actually built kind of a mock-up Wicked Edge a while back. I used some PVC pipe and the stones from my Lansky system and glued them to the PVC. And then I used, I think it was 1/4-inch ratchet swivels. And then I made the,
right.
I took like one of them socket rods or the socket storage rails with all the little socket nipples on it.
Right.
And I measured and I glued them on there, and then I mounted that thing to the board, and then I took one of my old Lansky clamps and I clamped it to the board and screwed it so that way the knife would be held. And then I took that ratchet and I did all the, I figured out all the measurements, and I glued each one of those little nipples on that rail right where they needed to be for the different angles I liked. And then I took some 1/4-inch ratchet swivels with like 10-inch and 1/4-inch extensions.
Right.
And then I just, you know, set those ratchet swivels into one of those nipples, you know, the nubs on that rail. And then I did take that PVC pipe, slide it over whatever stones I wanted. I could work it just like the Wicked, and it actually worked really good. And I actually used it quite a bit. I just, when I was moving, it was kind of big and bulky, and I ended up selling it at the yard sale when we moved. And I just, yeah, I'm good enough at freehand sharpening. I've never really felt the need to build another one.
That's pretty clever. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, I might have to build another one sometime. I'll do a YouTube video on the build. I think there's a couple other people that have kind of done the same, real similar thing of putting YouTube videos on it. But I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
The Wicked Edge is a really cool system, but they are way overpriced. Way overpriced, in my opinion. I mean, it's just an aluminum block and a couple pieces of stainless steel rod and some diamond stones. I mean, it's not.
Right.
There's not $1,000 worth of materials there. There's about $40 worth of materials there.
It's pretty simple engineering.
Mm-hmm. So I mean that working with the ratchet swivels and the extensions with the like that, it's, you know, it wasn't precise at all, but it was close enough. It worked really well. Now if I was gonna build another one, I'd probably do things that's a few things that's a little bit different. Maybe the way I mount the stones to the rod, you know, do a few different things to try to make it a little more precise. But it worked really good. It was simple. You clamp your knife in it, you sharpen it, it would come out, you know, nearly perfect every time. So,
right.
Yeah, so there is that. I haven't gotten a chance to get on the Facebook page here in a few days. Have we had any Facebook questions from any listeners lately?
Not that I've seen. Everything's been kind of slow lately.
Yeah, I think I'd have to...
Maybe check in.
Yeah,
I was about to call it a night. So before I go to bed, I'll get on there and check.
Yeah, it's not a real bait. I'm just curious if there's anything. I can't really think of anything that anybody's asked lately that I wanted to touch up on the show. There was a guy somewhere earlier I saw asking about something, but I don't remember what it was. It's been kind of a long day.
Well, let's try to do an episode tomorrow night. We'll try to figure that out. And I have a couple subjects I was going to write up we could probably touch on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow. It'll probably be a week or so before I get another day off where we can do it. I was supposed to be productive today. I had a day off, drove home last night. I was supposed to be super productive. I woke up at 6 o'clock this morning. And then I would wake for about an hour, and I'm like, man, I'm tired. I'm going back to bed for a nap. And I ended up sleeping way longer than I was supposed to. And then when I did wake up, I was supposed to be putting a water heater and a pressure pump in my house. We just got our well put in there a couple weeks ago. I'm trying to start so we can start running water to the house. I was supposed to put a hot water heater and a pressure pump in today, but I ended up sitting around in a t-shirt and shorts watching Rick and Morty.
Not a bad way to spend a Sunday.
Now, and then this evening after I get done with the show tonight, I've got a bottle of Blackberry Bird Dog sitting here, and I'm probably gonna enjoy the company of Blackberry Bird Dog and watch some more Rick and Morty. I have to go back to work tomorrow. Now I'm back up.
Doesn't sound like a bad idea at all. I'm probably just gonna watch the back of my eyelids after running on 2 hours of sleep. I feel about dead.
Yeah, it's only like 7 o'clock here, and I'm back in Fairbanks, so I don't have just me and my camper, and there's not a whole lot to do. So
Right.
if it wasn't raining really hard outside, I'd probably be out there working on pulling some perch off that jetta. But it's freaking pouring rain out there, and I don't feel like standing around in the rain.
Can't
So
blame you.
I'm probably gonna later. I don't have a TV in here, so if I just watch either watch YouTube on my phone or Hulu and watch a little Rick and Morty. But anyway,
Yeah.
Nick, it sounds like you are about ready to pass out, so we'll probably
Yeah,
think.
I'm done.
All right,
I
we'll go.
worked way too hard today.
That's all right. Before I came over here and we started this episode, I stopped by Domino's and they had a $9 any size pizza, any toppings deal. So I got a large thick crust with sausage and all that other good stuff on there that I like. Peppers, peppers, olives, jalapenos, mushrooms, all the good stuff. So I have a date with Domino's Pizza, Blackberry Bird Dog, and Rick and Morty that I need to get to. So we'll go ahead and wrap this episode up. I appreciate everybody coming in to listen. Next time.
See y'all next time.